Okay, thank you again for joining us for our Alumni Hour. My name is Kimberly Williams, and I am an Outreach and Recruitment Officer with IIE. I am joined by my colleague, Susan Mundell, Assistant Director, Multi-Regional Programs at IIE, and our fellow, Katie Bailey. She was a fellow from 2019 to 2020 from Peru. If you wouldn't mind typing in the chat box if you can see my screen and you can hear my voice before we get started, that would be greatly appreciated. Okay, perfect. So the order of our presentation today, I'm just going to give a brief overview of the Fulbright program before we speak with Katie. So in the meantime, if you have any questions, if you can go ahead and type them in the chat box, we will answer your questions during the Q&A session at the end. Again, before we get started, I wanted to take a few minutes to discuss our mission and our history. Established in 1946 by Congress, Fulbright is a cultural exchange program sponsored by the U.S. Department of State and in partnership with 160 countries. Fulbright offers faculty, administrators, and professionals opportunities to study, teach, or conduct research abroad. Our mission, which is to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world, is really the heart of Fulbright. Diversity and inclusion is at the forefront of our mission. Fulbright strives to ensure that our program reflects the diversity within U.S. society. We are actively recruiting diverse pools of applicants from a variety of institutions to include community colleges, minority serving, rural institutions, and other professional organizations. I like to point your attention to the screen. Opportunities are open to people regardless of their race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, geographic location, socioeconomic status, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity.
Kim, you need to change your screen.
Okay, is everyone able to see my screen?
It's the blue screen.
It's moving on my end.
There we go.
Okay, everyone's able to see my screen? Perfect. Okay, at this time, I'm going to ask Katie to introduce herself. Katie?
Everyone, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Kimberly?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Katie Bailey. I went to Peru, Lima, last year in August and stayed until the beginning of February this year, right before global lockdown. I had the opportunity to serve as a public policy fellow. I was placed in the Peruvian national government's drug ministry, specifically in an office of their agency that does monitoring and evaluation of drug treatment programs all across the country. I have been doing public policy research for the past few years. As you can see there in my bio, I have a master's in public affairs, which was all very related to my work in Peru. And happy to be here and answer any questions you have today.
Perfect. Thank you, Katie. So we're going to proceed with some questions. So, Katie, can you tell us how you decided to apply for Fulbright or why you decided to apply for Fulbright?
I think like a lot of people who are interested in Fulbright, I'm kind of an internationally minded person, have some experience abroad before doing research and going abroad for college and things like that. So I was looking for more opportunities to do research, but in more of a professional way and less of like a student way, because I wasn't in school anymore. And I came across the Public Policy Fellowship, which aligned with my educational background and aligned with my ongoing interest of being involved in international policy. And then also the countries that were available, Peru was one of them. It was the only Spanish-speaking country. And you have to speak the language of the place you're going. And so I'm fortunate to have had the opportunity to go there and have known Spanish for a few years now. So it was a really clear decision for me to apply for that.
Okay, and what were some of the factors did you consider before applying?
I think some of the big things, obviously logistically, like what your life is going to be like when you take off for a few months to another country. So I had to think about whether my employer would approve of that and like what that would look like for coming back to work, whether I'd have to quit my job. I owned a condo at the time, so whether I would rent that out, all those sort of logistical things. And then also just related to the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship specifically, like what I thought I could actually contribute to another country's government and whether I felt like I had the skill sets that they might be looking for.
Okay, perfect. So we receive a lot of questions about our application process, and do you mind going into a little more detail about how you selected your particular country?
Yes, so as you all have probably seen on the website, there's a lot of different research types of Fulbright scholarships available. So I was kind of thinking about research, kind of independent research versus the Public Policy Fellowship. But the Public Policy Fellowship gave me the opportunity to actually work within an a different country's government, which I thought was really cool and an experience that I wanted to have. So I decided to follow through on that application, and then, like I said, Peru was the only Spanish-speaking country, so it was the only one that I was really qualified to apply for, but I was extremely happy to go to Peru either way, so.
Okay, and do you have any advice for applicants regarding the project statement or just the application process in general?
Yeah, so with regard to the project statement, I treated the project statement like a real research proposal. So I started out by looking at like academic literature and other reputable sources about things that are related to the topic I was interested in studying. And then I outlined like specific methodology that I might use to go about answering my research question. I was very specific about what I thought it could contribute to that government agency based on what I saw from international reports about things that would be helpful. So I did a lot of background research. I spent a lot of hours thinking about all those things before writing my proposal, and then was very specific about the steps and the timeline that I thought my project proposal would take. And in the end, what I actually did was not really that related to what my project statement was, but I think the fact that I had like a clear idea of how to go about, putting together a project was what was helpful for my application. And then the other thing I would say, there's letters of recommendation involved, so I definitely spent time thinking about, first of all, who would understand why I want to do this, of the mentors that I have, and talk to them about why I wanted to do this and what kind of reminded them about the skills and background that I have that would make me a good applicant, so that those letters of recommendation would be really reflective of how they thought I could do this fellowship well.
Okay, and what was the matching process like with your particular ministry?
So with the Public Policy Fellowship, when I first started the application process, there was a list of a few ministries that had been open to receiving Fulbright scholars. And so I chose one of the ministries from the list, and I did a lot of research, like I said, about, you know, whatever I could find about what they're doing and what kinds of assessments have taken place, sources like the World Bank and things like that, and so thought through how I could contribute to that specific ministry. But then in the end, the matching process is more of like a back and forth conversation with Fulbright and people from the embassy and the connections that are made in that country. And so it was kind of a long process. I found out pretty close to when I actually was leaving for Peru, maybe a month or so before, which ministry I would be at. And it was ended up being a ministry that wasn't on the list at all. So I initially applied to go to the social services ministry and ended up at the drug policy ministry, which I could find, you know, ways to use my skills in both of those ministries. But it was kind of a testament to how a Fulbright applicant should be the type of person that's flexible and adaptable and open to maybe experiences that you weren't expecting initially.
Okay, thank you.
Katie, did you have an interview with the ministry before you were placed there?
I did not. No. It was a series of emails back and forth, and then they at some point gave me the option between the Ministry of Environment and then the Drug Ministry. And so I have a lot more experience with drug policy than environmental policy, so I replied and with my experience in drug policy, and that's how that happened. And then they gave me the phone number of the person that manages the office in the drug policy ministry. And then we were like sending WhatsApp messages back and forth before I got there, just to kind of coordinate about what to do when I got there.
Okay, thank you. So can you tell us some of the benefits of completing a Fulbright thus far?
Sure. So I guess first of all, the experience was amazing. I met so many really interesting Fulbright scholars and fellows while I was there, before I left and while I was there. So that whole thing was awesome. The fact that I got to meet a lot of people who are professionals in important positions in a foreign country's government, that was invaluable. And I think it will. I would like to expand my career into more of a research or a international research realm. So I think it will probably prove useful to have those contacts. And then other than that, I think Fulbright has an awesome reputation internationally, and somebody who has completed a Fulbright and it's on your resume, an employer or for future opportunities, they know that you're the type of person that's adaptable, flexible, that you can represent your country well, you present yourself well, you can follow through on projects, you can write and interview compellingly. So I think just in terms of future opportunities, it's a good experience to have had.
Perfect. And did you engage with the U.S. Embassy while you were there at all? And if you did, what was the level of engagement?
So we had a lady at the embassy who was kind of, part of her role was overseeing Fulbright scholars. And so we met with her once, and we were in touch with her via WhatsApp also, kind of regularly in case we needed anything. We met once with other folks from the embassy who gave us like a safety and medical briefing, which was very helpful. And then I made a point to reach out to people in the embassy who work with the ministry that I was placed at. So I met with them, and it was really interesting to talk to them about how the U.S. is involved with drug policy in Peru. And she had a lot of contacts at the ministry that she put me in touch with. So that was a good connection to make. But that was something I had to make happen.
And Peru is actually a country that has a Fulbright Commission as well. Were you active and engaged with the Fulbright Commission there?
Yes. I went to the commission a few times. We had a few like social events, which was really helpful because I met a lot of people that way, especially when I first got there. And then at some point, I don't know how many, there were more than 20 Fulbright scholars in Peru at the time, 20, 30, I don't know. But we, as many people who could, we met again at the commission, and we all did a presentation about how our time in Peru was going and what we were doing, which was really cool. And also, the commission was just really helpful in terms of, like, finding things to do or asking for advice or just, like, even little things about, you know, where to shop and stuff like that.
Katie, you were also lucky to get a travel fellowship to travel within the region. Can you talk about that and how you went about getting that fellowship?
Yeah, so that was a really cool opportunity that I learned about, that Fulbright scholars, some of them, I guess, depending on which scholarship you have, some people have international conferences where you get the chance to travel to another country. But the Fulbright or the Public Policy Fellowship did not have that opportunity. So instead, there was a grant opportunity to go to another country and share something related to what you were doing with your Fulbright in the host country, or to like share just to like share. Expertise in the area. So it's not, I wouldn't say it was easy to come across somebody who would want to invite me from another country to come speak, you know, somewhere important so that it would align with the goals of this grant. But I did the work to just try to reach out to people and say that I was interested, and these are the topics that I have expertise in and I could present on. And eventually I was put in touch with a lady in Uruguay who was a former Fulbright fellow in the United States. And that was an example of the usefulness, again, of the Fulbright network as well. But she was excited to talk to me as another Fulbrighter, and she worked at the drug policy ministry in Uruguay. And she looked at the things that I have experience and expertise in, and was like, "Actually, we're looking at doing something similar to this. We'd love for you to come talk with us." And so we made that happen, and I got reimbursed for the travel, and it was a really, really awesome experience. They hosted me for a whole week, invited me to do lots of different things with them, and meet different people, and visit different like drug treatment facilities, and the Cannabis Festival, so that was one of my favorite things for sure.
Great, and finally, what was something that impressed you about your colleagues or experience?
So by colleagues, I'm going to assume that you mean other Fulbrighters, which They were all so impressive, and it was just cool to know, to have met all the other Fulbrighters in Peru and to hear about the things that they were doing, because everyone was doing extremely different types of work. And just, like, one of my friends was into poetry, and she did translations and was, like, doing interviews with people in the Chinese-Peruvian neighborhoods and stuff in Lima, doing just work on studying the culture and how poetry is expressed through that culture. Another friend of mine was interested in drug use and HIV prevention, just lots of really, really interesting stuff. And because of meeting them and like going to visit them or see what they do, or they would invite me to things that they, you know, events that they knew about, that was also part of my, one of my favorite parts of the whole Fulbright experience was just knowing all the other Fulbrighters and getting a little bit involved in what they were doing.
Thank you, Katie. And at this time, we are going to begin our Q&A session. So if you can bear with me while I sort through the questions. So, Katie, can you talk a little bit about some of the activities that you did outside of your ministry?
Like Fulbright?
It looks like. It looks like maybe extracurricular or community involvement within the community there.
I did things that were, like went to events and stuff that were related to, like, other things that the Fulbrighters were doing. So I went to a lot of, like, cultural events at museums and stuff. I went to some poetry readings with my, my poet friend. I made a lot of friends, just local friends, and hung out with them on the weekends and stuff. I had to travel a lot, actually, which was another cool thing about my job. So I spent a lot of time traveling around the country to support my team at the ministry in monitoring drug treatment programs across the country. So I was always super active and doing something. If I wasn't active in something work-related or some cultural activity, I was going out with other Fulbrighters and just exploring the city and stuff like that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. And would you mind sharing, I know that you addressed this earlier, but would you mind sharing how you decided on who would write your letters of recommendation?
Yeah, so I chose mentors of mine from, I think they were all from grad school or undergrad, people I had done research with or who knew me well because of being in a class with them. But I didn't choose, you know, like a random professor or the professor whose class I got the best grade in. I chose people who I had a relationship with, so who knew me, you know, relatively well and people who I felt comfortable talking with and who could speak to, like, they could speak to having known me for a few years and known what I'm interested in doing and how that's all relevant to the Fulbright application. So I would say just people I was close with.
Okay. I have a question about any potential language barriers that you experienced. Did you experience any at all? And if you did, how did you overcome them?
Yes, definitely. I've spoken Spanish for several years now and did part of undergrad and grad school in Spanish and stuff, so I had, I was able to do, like, my Fulbright interview with the Fulbright Commission in Peru in Spanish and things like that, so they knew I had a level of Spanish that was adequate, but I think with any new country, they have words and ways of saying things that you're not necessarily familiar with if you haven't lived there, and especially within the ministry, like, you know, anywhere you go to work, they have their own acronyms and they have their own, like, programs that you're not familiar with the names of and stuff. And so sometimes that would happen. And especially in big meetings, they would talk about things sometimes that I didn't understand what was going on because of the way they said it or some specific name I wasn't familiar with. So I had a notebook with me at all times. And I would just try to write down what I heard them say so that I could ask somebody later in confidence, made some closer friends at the ministry who were nice enough to answer all those questions for me. But I wrote a final report in Spanish, and I'm sure it wasn't, you know, the way that native speakers would write it, but it was sufficient, and they told me it was useful, so it worked out.
Okay, thank you. Can you talk about your policy experience prior to the Fulbright and how you discussed that in your application?
Sure. So, like I mentioned, I have a master's in public affairs, which obviously is not a requirement at all for the public policy application, but because of that education experience, I have a job I had a job at the time in public policy research, and so I was living in Indianapolis at the time. I was working at Indiana University, and for the most part, my work was related to like working for state or local government projects, doing evaluation, helping the government do research, things like that. So that was all, those were the experiences that I pulled from. I obviously didn't have experience doing like federal government work in the U.S. or like, you know, national government work in other countries, but I in the end, it's all sort of similar. You get a problem and you analyze the problem, look at the research, see what other people have done, and you figure it out. So those are the experiences I pulled from. I worked before that research job. I worked in the state government for a while too, so I think all that was kind of relevant.
Okay, thank you. And can you give a little bit more background about what the work consisted of with the ministry that you worked with?
Sure. So I went to work every day of the week, and I stayed all day like all the other workers did. Some public policy fellows don't quite do it that way, but that I wanted to do that so that I could get super engaged in the team. And so some of the work, I started out with an idea of what kind of like independent research I wanted to do, but I didn't go in the first day saying, you know, this is my agenda, this is what I'm doing. I went and just said, I'm willing to do anything that you need help with. And so some of the first jobs that I had there was just like simple data entry stuff or like data cleaning, lots of like report writing. Just kind of the day-to-day stuff. We would have team meetings, we would all eat together in the cafeteria, and then whenever I didn't have something specific to do, I would just start reading a lot of the materials that they gave me to learn more about the ministry and what they were doing and think about how my research interests fit in with that. So a lot of it was kind of mundane tasks, but because of that, I learned a lot about what my team actually does and like how the ministry operates on a basic level and a database and data and systemic level. So that was useful, I would say. And then eventually they started taking me on trips with them. So they do monitoring trips. They go all over the country to visit the areas where they have government-funded drug treatment programs, and part of my team's job was to go and actually check it out and then write a report about what we found. And so I got to do several trips like that and then get back and write reports about it, do a bunch of expense logs. They paid for my trips, too, to do that, which was cool, but it was a lot of work to just get your money back.
Okay, so I have another question. How did you select the topic for your research?
I have to talk about it in two different ways, because one was like my actual application, and then one was what I did in real life. So for my application, I just thought about things that I have experience, topics I have experience in. So I would say, At that point, I didn't have like a specific like thematic or like a topic area that I was a particular expert at. What I knew how to do was evaluation, and so my whole proposal was about assessing how evaluation works in another ministry and thinking about ways that they could add different kinds of evaluation tools or methods, things like that. And then when I ended up at the drug policy ministry, that whole idea got scrapped, basically. And I spent the first couple of months actually just doing the work that I just described and learning about the ministry, and then talking with my team and my manager about what I could do that would be helpful to them. And also something, you know, that's related to what I know how to do. So it was sort of related in the end, but I ended up writing a report about the practices of monitoring and evaluation specifically for the drug treatment programs in the country. So I ended up having like a report of like, I don't know, 10, 15 recommendations for how to improve processes or to use different tools that would make things easier or plan for more in-depth evaluation down the road, things like that.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. How did you determine your grant length?
My grant what, sorry? Sorry, what was
Hi, can you hear me? Sure, how did you determine your grant length, so the length of your grant?
Oh, trying to think how that thought process went. I had it, so I was working at the time, and I was working at a university who was very supportive of my Fulbright application, and so I had to take a leave of absence, which meant that they would that I would continue to have my job when I returned. So I had to think about which projects could be taken care of without me there, like when I should be back for other obligations I had at home. And so I ended up choosing a shorter time period than most public policy fellows, I think, 6 months, because of things I wanted to return for, which I regretted. I wanted to stay longer, but it turns out I came home just in time for quarantine, so I couldn't have really stayed longer anyway. But I would I recommend going as long as you can.
Okay, thank you. So to follow up to that question, do you have any advice on how to approach a leave of absence from an employer based on your experience?
Yes, so I did a lot of like teamwork. So first I started by talking with my team members about the possibility of me not being there with them, and they were all very supportive of that. I talked with the director of the research center that I worked for and laid out a plan for how long I would be gone and who would take over my projects while I was gone and then how I would get involved when I came back. He was probably the one that took the most convincing, so it was useful to have that plan laid out for him before I talked to him about it. And then after that, it was just an HR process, filling out HR paperwork. And they were actually really supportive, so hopefully you work somewhere like that.
That's great. Katie, did you initiate those conversations before you started the before you submitted the application, or after you found out you'd made it further through the application process?
So honestly, I talked with my like close team members before, like as I was applying, because I was really excited about it, just even the possibility. I didn't talk to my director about it because I didn't want him to worry about me being there or not being there or, you know, getting fired or something like that. So I didn't talk to him until the process started of actually getting interviewed and talking further with Fulbright.
Perfect. And I'm taking a look at some of the other questions that are coming in. So questions about letters of invitation. So letters of invitation are not required for this program at all. You are being placed in a specific ministry. So for those that are interested in the combination of teaching and research, so again, I see a couple of questions from attendees looking for teaching and research. I do encourage you to take a look at our homepage, CIES.org, and take a look at our awards catalog. You can filter out opportunities just for teaching and research. So we do have a few more minutes before the webinar concludes, so I do encourage you to continue to send in your questions. While we're waiting for more questions, Katie, do you have any advice, any overall advice for anyone that is considering applying, however they have not yet started the process because they're not quite sure which route to go?
I think if you're interested, you should totally figure out which fellowship or scholarship is the best fit for you. I think the variety of different kinds of projects that my Fulbright friends were doing was massive. So I think Fulbright is open to all sorts of different topics of interest. And so if you think you have like an obscure interest and they might not be interested, I would encourage you to just dig into that and explain how that interest fits in with the opportunity.
Okay, and I'm receiving a couple of questions. The attendees are wondering if it's okay to contact you directly regarding any specific questions or any advice.
Yes, I think my email address was on the slide. You can email me, and I have a big network of Fulbright friends who have done different types of scholarships and fellowships. So if somebody else I know could answer your question better than I can try to direct those as well.
Thank you. So this webinar will be archived within the next few days. It does contain Katie's contact information, the different questions that were asked, as well as our contact information. So again, because we do have some additional time, I want to make sure that I'm giving everyone an opportunity to ask Katie questions. So if you have any additional, if you wouldn't mind typing them in the box. And Susan, while we're waiting, is there anything that you wanted to add about the program?
Just that I think it's a very unique opportunity within the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. It's the only program that will place individuals in a government, a foreign government ministry to get, you know, that real world experience. And it's a combination of, you know, doing theoretical research, but also doing practical and getting practical experience.
Okay, great. Thank you. So again, the webinar will be archived with Katie's information. And if you have any additional questions, you can always email us at fppf@iie.org. If you have questions about eligibility or if you have any questions about the program itself, please feel free to contact us. And we are happy to host any advising sessions. So is there anything that you want to leave our attendees with, Katie, before we conclude today's webinar?
Good luck. I'm sure your interests are awesome, and so just good luck expressing them in your application and with the whole process.
Okay, thank you again, everyone, for joining us for today's webinar. You can check back to our webinar section on our website. It will be archived within the next few days and available. Thank you so much, and have a great afternoon.